Please note that in this recording, some of the questions may be inaudible, but the master's answers are audible and clear.
Any question you would like to ask? Yes?
Master, would you explain the difference between thinking about doing something and actually doing something?
You know the difference? By thinking constantly, we make a groove on the mind to do. We create a strong desire so that it may be fulfilled. And by doing something, we have fulfilled the desire already. You see, thinking can be erased from the mind. It can leave us. We may be able to resist it. But what is done is done. If we are constantly obsessed with certain thinking, certain desires, then we make a very strong and deep groove on the mind. And we may have to come to fulfill them. Yes?
Sometimes during meditation, I have thoughts of something that I'd like to do, and those thoughts keep coming back. And sometimes I find that if I do them, then I don't think about it during meditation. And I'm wondering what happens, like how does that happen? And am I attaching myself more to the world by doing those things?
Naturally. You see, you have marked a certain time for your meditation. At that time, nothing should exist for you, except you and the Lord. The whole world ceases to exist. That is the advantage of meditation. Otherwise, if you certain things you remember, you correct, you get up and you start doing it, what is that meditation then? Yes? Somebody was raising hand at the back. Yes?
So, when a disciple is initiated, there's a bond or contract between the master and the disciple that the disciple do keep the four vows and the master takes on his allotment, whatever his destiny is. I'd like to know, do the master control the whole karma, like bad and good, like a disciple break the vows? Do you call that sowing a new seed that do not come under the master doing? Or we have a habit of saying
you
that...
You see, general always arm the soldier to fight the enemy. Soldier has to fight the enemy. General doesn't have to fight the enemy. He can guide him, he can arm him, he can advise him. But fighting has to be done by the soldier in the front. So disciple has to attend to meditation, fulfill their obligations. And master puts them on the path and guides them and tries to keep them straight on the path. And constant guidance outside and inside is always there. But then disciple has to play its own part.
You have told a disciple that you have sown a new seed and you have to come back in another life to pay for it. That's another allotment.
It depends upon your attachments. If your attachments are strong for certain objects, certain faces, no matter even if you have some progress in meditation, you may have to come back to fulfill those desires. If on the other hand, you are not attached to anything in this creation, and even if you have a little meditation to your credit, you may not come back. It depends where you built your treasure, where you are attached, to the creation or to the Father. Yes, please.
I was just thinking about, it seems to me that the more we meditate and through God's grace, we learn to love, the more we love the creation as well. And we can love the creation without being attached, can't we?
How can you love the creation? You can be loving to the creation, but you can't fall in love with the creation. You can be kind and loving and helpful to the creator, to the creation. But you can't be attached to the creation.
Love grow as our love for the Lord grows?
It can grow for the creation, but not in a particular people. Attachments are always for a particular person, particular objects. Loving everybody means loving none. Loving the one who's in everybody. Being loving and kind to everybody means being kind and loving to the one who is within everybody. Yes?
Professor talks about having intense longing. And when I was a seeker, I felt that intense longing. And now that I've been on the path for a while, I feel the meditation is like part of the daily routine. And I'm wondering if feeling content with that is a hindrance to the progress.
No, it doesn't become any hindrance. You see, after initiation, we start analyzing ourselves too much. Whether we have been able to detach from this object, this face or not, you see, we too much analyze with ourselves. Before that, we were not conscious of all those things at all. We were rather proud of that, but those attachments. So we don't go backward at all when we are attending to our daily routine, daily meditation. You see, if a room, you're sitting in a dark room, you don't know what is moving about in the room. If a little ray of sun comes in that room through the ventilator, then you realize how much insects are moving about, how much germs are moving about in the room. That little ray of light has been able to expose you to all that knowledge. Before that, you are unconscious about them even. You never knew about it. So similarly, after initiation, attending to meditation, we start too much analyzing ourselves, how much progress we have made, how much we have been able to detach. This calculation doesn't lead us anywhere. We should just continue with our meditation, and detachment is an automatic effect of meditation. Yes?
So we're told that we shouldn't relate any of our inner experiences in meditation. I was just wondering, what about our outer experiences? While I've been here at the Dera, sometimes when I look at you, things happen for me. Is it okay to relate these to people?
I think as much as possible we should try to digest. These are personal treasure. Why share with anybody? And what do we get by sharing it? These are all individual treasures, individual experiences. It's always better to digest within. Yes?
Maharaji, you say that the world should cease to exist during our meditation, and it seems like the mind just keeps secreting thought after thought after thought. And it's difficult to believe that actually one day the world will cease to exist.
Sister, it should exist, not that the world will exist, cease to exist. As far as we are concerned, it doesn't exist at all. The world will go on as it is. You can't stop the cycle of world.
No, I don't mean that, but the mind just keeps secreting thoughts.
That is our ideal is. That is what our ideal of meditation is. That nothing should come between us and the Father. Yes?
Does the Master come to all his disciples at the time of death?
It depends upon the disciples' own progress. If we live the teaching, if we are on the path and we are a devoted disciple, There's no reason why Master should not come. But if we don't fulfill our own obligation, then he may or may not. Yes, please.
Maharaj, it was in the cold winter of 74, here at Dera, a young man asked you a question. He said, "And Master, what about all these people, such as me, who are sick, old, invalid, weak, who can never see you with their gross material mind?" You did not immediately answer. You waited a moment and then you said something. "Those who can never see me, those are nearer to me than the people who are surrounding me here at Dera day and night." It is right what I remember.
You see, no, this was not the question. Question was, what about the satsangis abroad who have not been able to come here? I must have answered about them.
What is then your answer about all those old ones who can never see you? They must meditate, of course.
Of course. Master is within everyone. Master sees them all right. Master is as nearer to them as those who see them outside. It makes no difference at all, as long as they attend to their meditation. Yes?
The disciple does his duty, and the master collects an effect. And those that don't do their duty, he may come or he may not come. What happens to those that don't do their duty?
Pardon?
Who comes to the soul of the disciple who doesn't do his duty properly?
Well, all of their karmas. According to their karmas, if they have to come back to the creation, they will come back to the creation to fulfill their desires, fulfill their attachments. Yes, please.
There's a satsang, the person talking was talking about, I think, Shanti Saru. And there was a joke, so everybody laughed. Do you remember what he was talking about?
I'm supposed to remember. Shanti means peace. He was narrating an incident of a sadhu who had left his kith and kin and taken recluse life in the forest and Himalayas. And he has changed his name to Shanti Swarup, means embodiment of peace. So when he came to the city, there was a sutra. Sutra was a great devotee of one of the gurus. And he was very outspoken, too blunt and too outspoken. A lot of people used to go for his darshan because he has left everything, kith and kin, and he has become sadhu and he's absolutely embodiment of peace and all that. So Sutra went also to the person concerned, the sadhu. He asked his name. So he told him, "My name is Shanti Swarup." When he came back, he again went to him. He said, "I have forgotten it. Please tell me your name again." So 3-4 times he came and went back and asked the name. Ultimately, sadhu took a burning stick in his hand. He said, "Now I'll tell you my name," and ran after him. So Sutra came to the Guru Sahib and he was falling. He says, "Embodiment of peace I have brought to you." It was just an anecdote. Yes?
Master, beside the high concentration, for meditation. What's the trick to keep the mind straight?
Pardon?
Before the eye, beside the eye concentration, what's the trick to keep the mind straight in
meditation? You see, atmosphere. Atmosphere in which we have to build our meditation, that's very essential. It always keeps us quite adjusted. It's just like a fortification in which we live. Atmosphere, by attending the good company, company of the mystics, satsang, reading holy books, devotional books. We just build an atmosphere in which we have to build our meditation. It's a very essential part of meditation. Yes, please.
Master, I've heard it said that one look from the master to the disciple destroys the karma of the past 100 lives. Could you talk about drishti and what happens when the master looks?
Where did you read it?
Someone wrote it to me when we were at the Dera. They said,
ask someone there who wrote it to you. If he has created a question, he should answer it. I didn't read anywhere in Sant Mandir literature.
You said it.
Hmm?
I think he said that you said it.
He said it?
He said that he was quoting you.
It must be in some books then. Or must be on some tape. Yes?
Raji, in the same way that the Lord sends a physical manifestation in the form of the Master to Earth, does Kal have any physical manifestations on the earth? Does Kal send physical manifestations?
We are all representative of the Kal. As long as our mind is dominating us, we are all representative of the Kal. Mind is there, and it has come into the physical manifestation through us. Yes?
When a soul advances spiritually, can it stay within all the 24 hours while attending to worldly duties?
Pardon?
When a soul is advanced, spiritually advanced, is it possible for that soul to stay within while attending to worldly duties during the day, or must...
Soul remains within, you mean where?
Well, it's beyond the eye center.
You see, he, as Christ said, I can take this body when I want to, and I can leave this body when I want to. So soul has access back for the worldly work and can go back to that level of consciousness anytime it likes. Because soul has yet to go through his destiny, being in this body. And all those karmas has to be accounted for, which has been allotted as our destiny in this world.
Consciousness would stay within, though, once it's connected with...
Attitude of the mind will be towards that side. Attitude of the mind towards will always be towards the Father. Yes?
Is it possible that the soul can... Is it possible that the soul can go down?
Soul can?
Pulled down.
Pulled down?
Yeah.
What do you mean by pulled down?
Soul is already
pulled down through the mind, towards the senses. You see, now soul having taken the association of the mind and mind being slave of the senses, so soul is already at the level of senses. Pardon?
Can you take it up again?
Take it up.
All the time that we devote to meditation is nothing else but trying to withdraw, you see, pull back our soul from the senses and take it back to the eye level. That is what the purpose of meditation is.
Does the radiant form of the Master cut away our attachments to this world?
Naturally, it attracts you towards itself. And when your mind is being attracted towards the radiant form, so naturally it is getting detached from the senses, detached from the world.
If when we die, we have, on the one hand, a lot of attachment for the world, but we've been doing our best as a satsangi, and we get the vision of the radiant master when we die, does that cut our attachment at that time?
I don't understand your point, vision.
If when we die, Master comes to take us in this world.
Yes.
But we still have strong attachments. When we see the radiant master at that time.
No. How can that be erased from your mind? You have been attached to this creation since ages. And that they have already made strong groove on your mind. Even if you are met by the master within, you have to, you see, clear all those karmas. Either by taking birth or by meditation within. Devon nu kao aap band karan aur ek chaukidar khada karaya karo bhal nu kao utthe ais dua sadkan te koi nahi truck traffic bilkul nahi chalega bahar di sadkan to aur bahar sadkan to ja. Yes, please.
Master, in a line of perfect masters, could you please tell me how, like, the first master, is he initiated by someone else, or is it just a direct communication from...
Pardon?
Like, when a line of perfect masters starts, the first master in that line, was he initiated by someone else?
Must be. They have to go through their ceremony, whatever it may be. You see, Guru Nanak explains that a lighted candle can only light another candle. Candle may be ready, but little spark is required to lighten it. In the other case, you have to make the candle before you can light it. So they have to keep that tradition.
Very first one.
We'll better ask the God. If you will go on tracing the history, it will not lead you anywhere. But that is what the teachings are, traditions are. Yes?
Maharaji, can you explain the difference between a primordial saint and a param saint?
Which saint?
The primordial saint, like Kabir, and the param saint.
Param saint? Param Sant. See, there is absolutely no difference in these things. We are just lost in the words. You see, whosoever has, I so many times said, some people earn wealth, some people inherit wealth, and some people earn wealth, some people just inherit wealth. Some people just get it as a gift. Some are born rich, some work hard to become rich. Whosoever got the wealth, he is a rich person. We shouldn't be lost, you see, how he got it. Beggar is only interested in knocking the door of a person whom he thinks will be able to deliver him something in charity. He doesn't go into the background from where he got that wealth which he's giving in charity. He's a beggar. Whether that person has inherited it or he has worked hard to get it, he's only concerned about, you see, the charity. So he knocks at the door of the rich house. Yes, please.
Yes,
So I know this is a ridiculous question, but we all know how bad this world is. Is it possible when a soul is born into the physical world, it could be born in a different planet, in a different galaxy somehow?
You see, when our attachments are here, how can the soul go anywhere else? It has to come back to fulfill the attachments, past associations. Our attachments all through are here.
So we're all like one big family in this world, keep coming back, and there's a number.
Yes, if you can call it family, you can call anything. But very quarrelsome family. You see, this is our attachment, will pull us to their own level. We know nothing about them, it's only academic interest. Academic knowledge. And how can we go there when we are not attached to anybody? We don't know anybody at all. Yes,
please. Can you give me some understanding about how to be around somebody who's angry?
How to?
Yeah, and not take on, you know, not become a part of that anger.
How to overcome your anger?
How to be around somebody who's angry, become a part of that anger.
How to keep company of a person who's angry? By keeping yourself cool. It may affect him, sooner or later.
Become affected. How can I become cool?
Naturally, you see, you have to overcome that. We have not to be affected, we should be strong enough within ourselves. That is what the meditation is meant for, to make us strong. Yes?
Raji, there are many people, after they have been initiated in the West, who after a time tend to drift away from satsang. That's not to say that they don't follow the path and don't attend to meditation, but they tend to drift away from the Sangha. Can you just explain a little bit about the benefit of actually coming to satsang in the West?
Well, brother, so much it depends upon what type of satsang you have in the West. If you create an atmosphere in which you build devotion and love and strengthen each other's faith, which can lead us to meditation, then of course that satsang should not be missed. If there is only cookie parties and trying to show off and while away your time in gossips or just stories telling, then what will you get out of such satsang? It should be left, you see, to the individuals. Satsang definitely is very helpful. I discuss it every day because we definitely need an atmosphere in which we have to build our meditation. But then satsang should be which creates that atmosphere of meditation, of devotion, which dissolves and resolves our questions, our problems. Because we are always affected by the company we keep.
Sometimes the quality of the satsang, because the only person who gives satsang is the master, and people in the West give talks, and sometimes the quality of the talk may not always be, it comes from the heart, but it may not be like as high quality, always consistently a high quality.
You see, it depends upon the individual. If they like the atmosphere, they can attend it. If they don't like the atmosphere, nothing should be, nobody can be forced. Coming to the satsang is absolutely voluntary. It should come from the heart. There's no roll call there. Yes?
Can it be that a disciple goes in during the meditation and makes some progress, but they've got their eyes closed inside, or that they're blind inside, so they don't see anything?
You mean when they don't see anything?
that we can go in but have our eyes closed.
Eyes?
Spiritual eyes closed. And so, although we are making progress, we don't see anything. Can that be?
Yes, definitely. You see, we, right when we start withdrawing from the toe of our feet, we are making progress in meditation. But eye will only be open when we are able to concentrate here at the eye center. And there's a long way from our feet to the eye center to come. But we have to pass through these phases, before we can reach to that level of consciousness. Any time we devote to meditation is to our credit, and we definitely make progress by that. Yes?
As long as we're in the darkness, does it mean that we love the creation more than we love the Master?
Pardon?
As long as we're in the darkness, does it mean that we love the creation more than we love the Master?
I mean, if there's a darkness, naturally, we are attached to the creation. That is why this darkness is. Darkness is due to our attachment to the creation, to the senses. Yes, please.
Master, on the guest house bulletin board, there is some advice from the great master about how to make the most of your stay here. How to make the most of this of your stay while here at Sundara. And in particular, solitude is mentioned, avoiding social contact, and silence, avoiding conversation, having one meal a day. Is this advice?
Is it written to some foreigner? Is it in some spiritual gems or where it is?
I don't think it's spiritual gems. I don't know the origin.
Then we must know the book. Where it? Divansav, you see, that is what Divansav says. He has to talk from his own experience. Some people need more than even two beads to exist. We don't want to starve them. I mean, one shouldn't overfeed. And that it depends upon the age, it depends upon the type of work man is doing. Yes?
Before initiation, I used to cry all the time and have all this longing for God. And after initiation, since then, I haven't cried at all. Is there any possible reason for
that? You should analyze better yourself, that why don't you cry now? Are you contented, or are you happy, or do you get something, or what is the reason that you are not crying now?
If the Master makes you stronger through meditation, and the strength, if you cry, can make you weak. You can become real sensitive and lose your balance.
You see, if a child is crying of hunger, mother goes and lifts the child. Before she feeds the child becomes quiet. He doesn't weep anymore at all. What is the reason?
I thought you had to cry to get anywhere, you know. I really had this longing, you know. This.
Child is quiet because child knows that he will get the food now. He didn't get it, but he knows that he will get it now because he's in the mother's lap. He has no worry, no fear. Yes?
In reading, there sometimes it's been said that it's very important not to hurt another person's feelings. And what I'm wondering is when we say things that we're not aware we're saying that hurt other people's feelings, like it's an unconscious, it comes out.
Well, sister, both words are very comparative, feelings and hurt. What type of feelings another person has, and what type of a hurt is supposed to be? They're both comparative words. It doesn't mean that you will go on yielding to another person just with the excuse that I may not hurt the person. And you compromise with yourself. That is not the question of hurting the other person's feeling. You have your own feeling also. You have to live with yourself too. By living with yourself, you should not hurt another person's feeling. That is right. Yes?
Please, could you explain what it means to synchronize Simran with Dhyan? What does it mean to synchronize Simran with Dhyan?
Means at the same time you should contemplate on the form of the Master when you are doing Simran. Not that first you do Simran and then you do Dhyan. Both should go together. That's what I mean synchronizing. Simultaneously they have to be done. Yes?
When one is trying to withdraw one's consciousness to the eye center, which is more important, the Simran or the Bhajan?
Just repeat your question again.
When you are trying to withdraw your consciousness to the eye center,
yes,
which is more important, the Simran or the Bhajan?
Simran will help you to withdraw to the eye center. And Shabad will help you to pull you upward. Both are important. Unless you come to that level from where you can be pulled upward, how can you be pulled? So both are essential. Yes?
I have trouble meditating because my mind is rushing out into all sorts of areas, and I can't seem to keep my mind still.
Everybody's mind running out. That is why we attend to meditation, to withdraw back to the eye center. Otherwise, it's the habit of the mind to run out with any excuse. There is a constant struggle with the mind to pull it back to the eye center. That is not mental at all. Yes, please. Yes, yes.
I was thinking about how I've grown up as being achievement-oriented. Achievement-oriented means trying to get the best grades or to be the best. And when we're sitting in meditation, what you share is to not think about making progress and not think about how many rounds of simran you got in, or how much your mind is being still, or whether you're moving forward. I was just wondering how to work with the part of myself that's achievement oriented.
Attend to meditation, achievement will automatically come. Meditation is always achievement oriented. It is for achievement. Yes?
I wonder if you could explain a line in Spiritual Discourses where it says that our thoughts can take to the Lord only in the company of Gurmukhs.
Only?
Only in the company of Gurmukhs.
That is what satsang means. That is what satsang means. Yes?
Yesterday you talked about praying to the Lord and also talking to the mind. But doesn't the Master know all of our thoughts? And so even if we're talking only to our mind, doesn't the Master receive our
thoughts? You see, whether we pray to the Lord or whether we don't pray to the Lord, it is the same thing. He knows what we need, and if He is to give us, He will give us even without our asking, without our praying. Because He knows all what we need. We have to tell that person what we need, who doesn't know about our requirements. One who already knows what are our requirements, what do we need, what are our wishes. There's no sense in telling him and asking him. If he is a giver, he is also the knower. Not that he will know better when we ask him. So, prayer is more or less for our mental consolation. It gives us a source of strength to face the situation. It doesn't change the events of life. They will, as set, go. Prayers won't change the course of our life.
Child talk with the father, just conversation without asking, just communication back and forth. You don't have to ask in order to...
You see, when we are talking within to our master, thinking we are talking to the master, and we are also getting the answer, it is the mind which is questioning and answering. How do we know that we're talking to the Master?
That's my question. How do we know that we're talking to the Master and not...
Unless we see him. Unless he speaks to us. How we know whom we are talking? And who's answering us?
But he always hears us, doesn't he?
Of course, even without your talking, he hears you. That's what I said. Even without our asking, without our talking, he hears us. He responds to us, and he will help us. So there's no harm in praying to the Master within, but whatever answer you are getting, if you don't think that you are getting from the Master, that may be from your mind, what I meant to say. There's no harm in praying to anybody. But sometimes when we start talking to the Master and we think we are questioning and he's answering, that is mostly our mind. Yes?
When we are doing this, what should we do? Should we just try and stop that, or should we start doing simran?
Do meditation. Meditation is nothing but a prayer. Meditation is nothing but knocking at the door of the giver. Meditation is begging the Father for His grace, for His forgiveness, what stands between us and the Father. See, meditation alone can never clear all our karmic accounts. Attitude of the mind which we develop by meditation, that helps us a lot. That fills us with devotion, love, and makes us feel the separation of the Father. And we become restless without Him. Our whole attitude towards the world is then changed. By mere meditation, if you think we can ever account for our all karmas which we have been committing in the previous life, it's impossible. Nobody can do it. Not what to say, 4 lives, even 20 lives, we cannot do it. How much dross we have collected. But when the Father sees our attitude, you see, He sees the devotion and love within us, which we can only develop by meditation, by living the way of Santmat life. That, you see, invokes His grace to forgive us all what stands between us and the Father. Guru Nanak explains in his Shabad that load of our karmas is so much that just as we go on scratching the earth by our nail, we will never be able to reach the bottom, to the water. By just scratching the ground, we can never reach the bottom of the water. It is just your grace that you will forgive us. So we have to attend to meditation so that we are filled with love and devotion for the Father. That's why Christ said, blessed are those who mourn, for they shall get comfort. Who are missing Him, who are full with love and devotion for the Father, who have become restless to become one with Him, they are the fortunate ones who will ultimately get comfort. Yes?
Referring to your previous answer, does that mean that if a group of people get together and pray for somebody's health, you know, to be restored to health, that if they get better, they would have got better anyway?
Well, if it gives you mental consolation, there's no harm. Not that you will be able to help the person by praying. You can't change his destiny. You get source of strength to face the destiny of that person. And you get strength to live through that events of your life connected with that person. But just my mere prayer, you can't change his events of life. It is a mental consolation, which is also very essential. We need somebody to lean on, to knock at, and then it gives a source of strength to us. But we should not think that we have been able to change the course of events of life.
People who actually pray sometimes for people that they don't even know. They're just given the name of that person and then they sit in a circle and pray for them.
Well, let them pray. Let them pray. If prayer can change our destiny, nothing can be easier than this. Mere set prayers. Every religion has mere set prayers. Some repeat 5 times a day, some repeat 2 times a day, some repeat. Yes?
How did we get picked to be initiated by the Master or the Lord?
How does?
Randomly, I mean, which souls does He pick to bring back?
He knows best whom He marks. Christ said, I have come for the allotted ones, for the marked ones. And they recognize my whistle and they will automatically flock around me. So, marking has been done by the Father, not by the mistake. And they will recognize that mistake. They will automatically flock around the mistake. Yes?
I mean, when I came on the path, I wasn't really looking for the path, and I just saw a book, Divine Light, with your picture in it. I felt like I recognized you, so I wanted to find out about it. And that's...
Everybody has individual experiences, you see. He has his own ways and means to pull people. Yes?
Master, you said that meditation brings about an attitude of mind which invokes His forgiveness.
Yes. And also creates detachment from the world. That is also attitude of the mind. Now our attitude of the mind is towards attachment of the worldly object, worldly faces. But then whole attitude of the mind changes in a different direction.
We know when we're achieving that attitude of mind. Do we know?
We always know where we stand. Those faces, those things which meant so much for us, how much we care now, don't we know ourselves? Those, our weaknesses in which we used to take so pride even, how ashamed we feel now if we ever fall. Don't we know our attitude of mind? We automatically know how much they interest us anymore. Yes?
I know this question has been asked before, but I'm not quite sure of the answer. What is the difference between darshan and drishti?
You see, drishti is a Hindi word to look at. Darshan is when you look at. There's no difference. When somebody is looking at you, he is having your darshan. When you are looking at him, when he looks at you, it's a drishti, you can solve. When I look at him, it's my darshan. Nothing There's no special significance about these things.
It does not refer to only to a master's look.
It can be anybody. Just a devotional word to express the meaning. Yes?
Master, I haven't been initiated very long, and I'm confused about what I've spent most of my life doing, whether I was creating karma or paying off karma, and that's why it took me so long to come to the path or what, and I don't understand. You know, if I go for so long without the Master...
Sister, we can never know whether we have sown new seeds or whether we are going through the destiny. We can never know. So the best attitude is, whatever we do, we think we are going to sow a new seed. And if with our best intention, best efforts, still it happens, at the most you can say, it's my destiny, but still we can be wrong. Still there may be some justification or some conditioning of the mind. So we can never know at this stage.